This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome to This Week in the NFL. Getting down to the nitty-gritty here. We're in the conference championship week. I'm here with my very intelligent Rico Suave. The ladies love him. My co-host, John D'Amato. I'm the cowboy. John, how's it going?
Hey, you're about 0-for-3. That's... It's like watching a Knick game. Watching Tim Hardaway's shooting percentage.
Going to get another good pick. They're going to get another good draft pick. Kevin Knox looks good.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have a lot to talk about when we start this week in sports.
Absolutely. So, yeah, good point, John. You only have a couple more episodes of This Week in the NFL because the NFL's ending. So... we're transitioning to This Week in Sports with Cowboy and D'Amato. I hope our listeners, our loyal listeners, will continue to tune in, and maybe we'll pick up a couple if we're talking about some different stuff. Not everybody likes the NFL. Most people do, but not everybody. So John, wild and crazy year, right? Seems like the field's just wide open. Wide open field. This is the year that there's going to be upsets. Anybody can make the Super Bowl. And, the home teams in the 1 and 2 seeds, 4-0. I don't know if anyone saw that coming, but it shows, John, the more we think we know, the less we actually know.
Yeah, well, we went 3-1 on our picks, so at least we're not know-it-alls, but also we're not total fools. So,
this is true.
You're rocking what? I think you went 3-1 the other week too. So you're rocking about a 6-2, and I'm rocking about a 5-3. So we're above average. That's okay. You know, and nobody likes a know-it-all anyway.
I'm in a little pool where, just for fun with some folks where we. You know, about 25 people, we all pick the games, and I am currently in first place. So, 3 games left. I control my own destiny. If I go 3-0, I will win.
Congratulations. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. We got a senior that did well in our pick.
He did. He's still alive, I believe. He's still alive. Yeah. It's come down to Brian and Senior. 2 guys, all those guys know how to do is win. Both of them. All they do is win. So, I don't know. I can't pick against either one of them. So, my prediction is it comes down to it, is they tie. That's what I think.
That would be good.
All right. So, let's get right into it. Game 1. Chiefs 31, Colts 13. Man, oh man. I could talk about this game for the whole hour, John. But, real no-show. Real no-show. By the Colts, especially offensively. If I would have told you coming into that game that they would have had, what was it, 3 straight 3-and-outs, and like they were under 50 yards, I think, of total offense in the first half. I mean, it was like they were up against the 85 Bears. Luck looked awful. I don't know if it was the weather. Like, you know, I remember Peyton was always had some trouble in those weathery playoff games, but. The Chiefs came out, stepped on their neck like they should. The Chiefs' defense looked better than they have all season. You win the game in the trenches. The Colts didn't win in the trenches like they have been. And the Colts' defense gave them multiple chances to get back in this game. They even, you know, blocked a punt, scored a touchdown, and the offense was just having none of it. Just a total non-performance by the Colts, and the Chiefs kind of came out and took care of business. Not super impressive by the Chiefs, but they did it. They did enough to win, and the defense was impressive. I guess it depends on where you fall in that argument. Is this Chiefs defense for real now? Did they, over that 2-week period, fix everything, or did the Colts just lay a gigantic egg in a big spot? I kind of feel like like it's more the egg than the Chiefs defense suddenly being good, but I'd love your take.
Well, number one, the weather, first of all, I saw a lot of pundits, a lot of so-called experts says, oh, it's going to favor the Colts because, you know, Mahomes has never played in this type of weather. I don't know where they got that from because the Colts are a dome team. And not only that, if you go back in history, I mean, I don't have the exact stats or whatever, but I would say like eight out of 10 times or nine out of 10 times, the any sort of weather situation, oh, it favors the home teams. You got the, you know, they got their little tricks. Maybe they turn the heaters down a few degrees on the visiting sidelines, and just the home team just knows the fields, the ins and outs of the nuances of the field a little better. And if you go back in history, you would see that these any sort of weather situation favors the home team, and I don't see where the Colts would have a great advantage. The run games were about even, so. That was ridiculous right there. And then you saw that definitely Mahomes wasn't affected by it. He played a little safer game. He didn't have any touchdown passes, but he ran one in and he didn't turn the ball over.
He didn't have to be risky.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they jumped on top of him. So, you know, jumped on him early and the game was never really a doubt. So there's really no need for him to be gunslinging it around, right? Just win the game and move on.
And also, you know, how many times he drew the Colts defense off sides, and they definitely used their home advantage, which was another thing that went against the grain. All they heard about was how they haven't won since 1993 and all that, but they put that to bed. And I liked when it was 17-0 when the Colts got that block punt, made it 17-7, and I'm sure people thinking, oh, here they go again. Here's where Andy Reid's team collapses, and Mahomes just went bang, bang, right down the field. About four or five passes, boom. Travis Kelce just tore him up. And that's a situation where the Colts got to clean up in the offseason. Their linebackers and safeties, they gave up some big games to tight ends over the years. And they just went right to Travis Kelce. Boom, bing, bang, boom. About five players. And just like that, it was 24-7. It was never a game.
Yeah, but then, you know, people are – Vinatieri had his worst playoff game. Maybe it's just his worst game overall as a pro, missing a, you know, when he missed that 23-yard field goal. That, I mean, not that 24-10 is great, but at least you're within two scores.
No, combined with the extra point, it would have been a one-score game.
Right.
They could have. That was the one chance to get it to one score. But if he would have had those kicks, it would have been 7 points, but not to be. It was never in doubt for me.
No, same here. So impressive performance by the Chiefs, unimpressive performance by the Colts. But we talked about it last week. I think they'll be back, and they're being linked to both. I mean, they've been linked to both Brown and Bell. I wonder if they pull the trigger on either one of those. But you talked about it last week, John. This is a team built for success for the long haul. So nothing to hang their heads about after starting 1-5. Winning a playoff game, right, is pretty good season. It's a pretty good season, and they lost to a very good team. So, you know, the future's bright in Indy.
Sure, they need to shore up a couple more playmakers on defense, and maybe somebody to match with T.Y. Hilton, and they're going to be dangerous. They got picks coming up, and if Ballard has a good draft like he did drafting Nelson and Leonard, then they're going to be a team to be reckoned with all decade. Yes.
Absolutely.
We'll put them to bed now.
Good night. Good night. Good night, Andrew. It was a great year. Comeback player of the year. Done and done. Next up, this is the one we got wrong, and we've been riding the Cowboys all season, and I got some thoughts here. So Rams 30, Cowboys 22. In a game that never really felt that close, but that the Cowboys did have chances to, you know, one in particular, a chance to really make this a game. The Rams ran right through the Cowboys' defense. And when I say ran, I mean ran. I mean just an ungodly rushing performance. Both C.J. Anderson and Gurley were over 115 yards. It was just, they just gashed them from beginning to end with big, big runs. Kind of flipping the script because you would think it was going to be the Cowboys. The Cowboys and Zeke gashing the Rams, but the Rams really controlled this game. with their running game. Once they got up, it's the Cowboys are not a team really, really built to play from behind. But they did have their chances. And there's one fourth down play. You know, the Cowboys are driving, fourth and one. They had given it to Zeke on the last fourth and one, right up the middle. The Rams just completely, it was obvious they were selling out to stop, you know, say, hey, do anything but hand it to him up the middle. And Jason Garrett, you know, who evidently is going to be back as coach, just, yep, I guess we're just going to give it to him up the middle. And he got stopped, and that effectively ended the game for the Cowboys. Good season for the Cowboys. The Rams played their best game in a while. It's just, it was really weird. It's not how they usually play. I don't, we'll talk about the next week later. It's not how they usually play. The Cowboys' defense came up small, not being able to stop the run. Like, I mean, I guess they were focused on stopping the passing game or something. I don't know what it was, but those linebackers that we love did nothing to stop, in the interior guys did nothing to stop this, this ridiculous rushing attack by the Rams. So Rams heading out with some momentum. Cowboys, just like the Colts, had a good season after not a great start, better season than a lot of people thought they were going to have. But what stuck out to you in this game? Because I know we both thought this was going the other way.
The it's what we talk about. We're going to sound repetitive, but it's just dominant performance by the O-line and the D-line of the Rams, which was very surprising, especially the defensive line. They kind of laid in the weeds all year. And Sue looks like the Dominican suit looks like he took off all year and was just waiting for the playoffs to get his ring, because he stuffed the middle like his vintage days with the Lions. And he wasn't really much of a force, kind of coasted during the season where the teams ran on them. And their offensive line, they just controlled. I mean, C.J. Anderson, come on, the guy was moving furniture during the year. And he also played for the Raiders. Maybe he picked up some offensive plays from the great John Gruden.
He brought that knowledge just through osmosis. He was just around him for a few days, and boom, he's one of the five best running backs in the NFL.
I can't even say it with a straight face. Once again, I'm going to try the John Gruden thing, but yeah, that was a shocker. And I agree with you 100%. You nailed it. I think Dallas was expecting more of a Sean McVay, boy wonder, a lot of passing and Sammy Watkins and Cooks, a lot of what they're known for, a lot of razzle dazzle stuff. But they just went straightforward, old school, and Dallas just was not ready for it. And a big thing was it seems like Sean Lee and Van Der Esch, they kind of play the same exact position. And for some reason, they can't both be on the field at the same time. And they couldn't figure that out. A lot of times, Sean Lee was in there. Van Der Esch, who made All-Pro as a rookie, was on the sideline. And then that really hurt them. Not that I blame. I mean, Sean Lee, when he's healthy, he makes a lot of plays. He's a great linebacker, too. But they couldn't figure out a way to get them both on the field. They must play the exact same position.
Yeah, and it did. That's a good point.
That hurt him. That hurt
him. It just so happened on the third down where Goff sealed the game with the run. It was Sean Lee who missed him. Sean Lee had a shot at him at the sticks and didn't make the play. And Van Der Esch was on the sideline.
Yeah,
so
going down with a talent like Van Der Esch on the sideline. That's shocking. But I have to dispute your call of the Ezekiel Elliott, the fourth down play. You know, how many times have we seen where teams they try something, they try a pass or they try some razzle dazzle something on a fourth and one, and then everybody jumps them saying, oh, you got Ezekiel Elliott, you got the best running back in the league. All you got to do is give it to him, and he gets a yard. That's what they did. I really can't dispute them. They just didn't block. They just didn't block for him. Sometimes it just comes down. The coach can only do so much. The coach can only do so much. It's up to the guys in the trenches, like we always say. Repetitive again. But the guys can't block somebody.
I mean, I said it, John, because I'm watching the game. I'm pulling for the Cowboys, and I see the defense the Rams are in. And I said,
I got you.
Don't just give it to Elliott. Don't just give it to him up the middle.
I got you.
And there was a play earlier in the game where they pitched it to him. You're right. It's just a little misdirection like that. I mean, it's just when they're set, or at least spread them out. You know what I mean? Instead of having all the horses in there, at least spread some guys out to thin the middle out. Like if you watch, you know, a team like the Pats or a well-coached offensive team on those fourth down plays, they're running motion. They're doing different things other than just putting 10 guys at the line of scrimmage and trying to run it down your throat. Anyway, I know, and I know he gets that 7 or 8 out of 10 times. So can't ever say it's a bad call. It just really seemed in that scenario that the Rams were selling out to stop it, and like anything else would have worked. But I guess that's partially on Dak too. He's got the ability to change that play at the line if he wants to.
Yeah. Well, Sean McVay, he saved the reputation, especially, all these other 8 teams that had job openings. They all went for the next Sean McVay, the next boy wonder, genius that runs the spread offense, and they all went for offensive minded coaches. So if he took a loss there in 2 years in a row, and then in the first playoff game, that would have been a big hit to his reputation, and especially to all these teams that's the trend of the league going towards more the offensive minded coaches. So that was a big win for him. But
and he coached it was great game plan. I mean, yeah, take nothing away from it. It wasn't you know, he didn't try to get too fancy. He, you know, they must have seen something that they said we can run on these guys, and they just ran and ran and ran. And I like that I know CJ Anderson was bagging groceries, but he was effective the last 2 weeks of the season for them. And even with all world Todd Gurley back, McVay had them split the carries evenly, and they were both, it really worked well because they both were fresh the whole game. So kudos to him. Very, very good coaching performance.
Definitely.
All right, moving on. This was a surprising one. So, as Chargers at New England, Patriots win 41-28 in a game that really wasn't even close to that close. speaking of laying in the weeds, I don't know what that was, but I was with my little nephew, my cousin, and my uncle over at Buffalo Wild Wings, wearing the Josh Gordon jersey for the first time that senior had bought me for Christmas. Nervous as hell about this game, and then the patch came out and looked like it was the regular season in 2007. Man, I mean they were just. But both the run game and the pass game was just phenomenal. I mean, I know I talked last week about I thought this was going to be a big James White and Julian Edelman game, but I certainly didn't expect this. Neither one of those guys were both completely unstoppable. The Chargers just had no answer for either of them, and the Chargers had no answer for Michelle for the running game. And then on offense or defense for the Patriots, I mean, they really shut the Chargers down until the game was completely out of hand. I mean, it was 35-7 at halftime, and it could have been more. It could have been that Brady had a little brain fart at the end of the half and didn't get the team up to spike it in time. Otherwise, it would have been 38-7. So just a complete domination by the Patriots that has really flipped the script for a lot of people. And we'll talk about the upcoming AFC title game. But just where it almost felt like one of those, you know, like the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq, where they were like kind of didn't give a shit about the regular season and then just turned it on in the playoffs. I mean, it had that sort of feeling to it, like the Patriots were playing possum all year. I don't know if I believe that, but hell of a performance. 8 straight AFC title games, I believe, which is incredible. And I know a lot of people are not fans of the Patriots because of all the winning, but I think it's going to be a thing, like you'll miss them when they're gone, because true greatness doesn't happen too often, and we're experiencing it now.
I wasn't surprised at this at all. Philip Rivers has never been competitive versus the Patriots. That one game where they blew it in San Diego, that was their one chance. Otherwise, the other games weren't even close.
And even that game, the personnel on that Chargers team compared to what the Patriots had that year, it was like On paper, they should have beat the Patriots by 30 points.
Yeah, that was
Rashay
ridiculous.
Caldwell was our number one receiver.
The guy tried to return the guy had the fumble, the interception, and tried to return it, and then New England got it back. That was a miracle, but that's like a down memory lane. But that was the only game that was even. The other games haven't been competitive. Philip Rivers spends more time crying at the refs, yelling at his team or whatever. It was a joke. Not much of a surprise. I haven't really seen Philip Rivers hasn't really had too many big playoff wins in his career, so that just goes down again. But I like how it was never in doubt as soon as New England won the opening coin toss and they elected to receive. That's rare for a Bill.
Very rare. Very rare.
I knew there was something up, and they just took it and they ran it right down, man. Got right in the end zone with ease. I was like, he knew something. And it was over from there. I wouldn't say a shocker, but when he made that decision, you knew something was up. They knew that they could get to him. And, you called it, James White, 15 receptions. You said he'd be a big part, and that was huge. Not much to say, just an easy, methodic Patriot win at home, dominant at home all year.
Yeah, and I mean, Rivers was showing a lot of emotion there during the game. I mean, I could see why he was frustrated, but he kind of came off, and he's come off like that before, like a little bit of a brat, like blaming everybody but himself, little Roethlisberger-y. Maybe it's something to do with that draft class. But I mean, I was worried because of their road record, and they were 12-4. I mean, and they were a really good team. So the Patriots did that to a really good team. They did not play a good game, and I don't know what the hell they were thinking on defense. I mean, everybody knows, right? I mean, it's been the book on slowing down the Patriots has been the same for years, right? Man to man and get pressure up the middle on Brady. They played zone the whole game and didn't bring any pressure up the middle at all. The Patriots blitz the hell out of Rivers, the Patriots don't blitz that much. And I mean, they were in his face the whole game. I mean, it was just great, great coaching performance by Belichick. Great coach. This very, very game team specific coaching performance, especially on defense, I thought was great.
Yeah, Ingram and Bosa, who dominated the Ravens, they were invisible in this game. But everybody always says, oh, all you got to do to beat New England is just get pressure on Brady and he'll blow it. But it's easier said than done. We've seen in history only a few teams have been able to do it. And the Chargers weren't one of them.
The Chargers weren't one of them. But the zone. They weren't. Yeah. That's what the Steelers always do. The Steelers always played zone against the Patriots and always just got.
Get burned, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Brady can do those 10-yard passes down the field. I mean, in his sleep, he'll be able to do that when he's 55 years old.
Yeah. The Super Bowl, too. Atlanta, the same thing. Well, actually, they kind of got tired, but they did well in the first half putting pressure, but. They got tied in the second half and couldn't do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, like you said, dominant home win for the Patriots. Good stuff. Last but not least, the most competitive game of the day. Exciting game. We were talking throughout this one. Saints 20, Eagles 14. The Eagles jump out 14-0. Breeze throws a pick on his first pass attempt of the game. The Eagles jump out 14-0 and don't score the rest of the game. So, you know, Foles has a little bit of the playoff magic, but this was a winnable game for them. The Eagles' defense deserved a better result than this because they played a phenomenal game against a great offense. And for your team to donut the three quarters when one touchdown wins the game, very difficult pill to swallow if I'm an Eagles fan or on the Eagles' defense. They had them. The Saints attempted to give this game away and lose the game. The Eagles played really well, but Foles, the bloom comes off the rose a little bit. He was bad. I mean, he was flat out bad in this game, and you don't hang this loss. I know Alshon Jeffrey dropped the ball at the end, and I mean, that's a bad play, but this loss isn't on him. I mean, Foles had multiple chances against a decent but not great Saints defense to put up some points and couldn't do it. But it was a scary game for a Saints fan, though. Jesus. What do you think?
It was very scary. And again, you know, we should pat ourselves on the back. We said that New Orleans would come out a little rusty. I figured the Eagles would jump out 7-0, but that was beyond rusty. I mean, Breeze, there was some false starts, delay of games. They were more nervous than the Eagles were, and just very for down, but down 14-0. And Foles, just a terrible pick. I mean, I had to bring you off the bandwagon there because you were you were with the guy Colin Canton having them build the bust, the Hall of Fame bust for Foles when it was 14-0. You were jerking off, going crazy too. I had to bring you. Come on, the guy, 16 points and 14 points in the playoffs. Let's relax on putting them in the Hall of Fame. And that was an awful pass. A great quarterback like Breeze or Brady. When they get a team down 14-0, they go for the hammer. They wouldn't have thrown that interception. They at least get a field goal out of that to make it 17-0. That interception was one of the key plays that turned the game around.
It was a killer.
Let's calm down. And also in the second half, he missed receivers too. But hey, not to take nothing away from him, because if you keep it close, you know, I think when the game's on the line, he's going to come through. And he probably would have came through again if it wasn't for Jeffries missing that pass. But also another big play was down 14-0. Peyton just went all out with that with the fake punt, and you know the Eagles were right there. They were ready for it. And Taysom Hill is just a bulldog. He bowled his way through it because the Eagles were right on it. It wasn't like they were fooled or anything. So Peyton, the riverboat gambler, you know, he usually when he takes the gambles, he usually is usually successful with it. And also that drive that took about
11 minutes or whatever the hell it was.
They kept going back with penalties, two steps forward, two steps back, and then eventually the fourth down play, and it wasn't even Michael Thomas. A little nervous because that Kirkwood kid drops some passes sometimes at time, and he came down with it and got his feet. And
Michael Thomas was
huge.
Incredible. Right there. I mean, what a game he had, and we saw that coming too. Because I mean, Allen Robinson lit them up the week before, and so the Eagles have kind of had trouble with number one receivers all year, but this was ridiculous. I mean, every time, I mean, 3rd and 15s, Thomas was making it look easy. Man, heck of a player. I mean, I'm not sure I'm on board with the recency bias of, you know, Michael Thomas is definitely the best receiver in the NFL. I mean, I think I like him a lot. I think he's in a pretty good situation. Doesn't quite have, for my money, you know, best receiver in the NFL. There's a little bit more of a game breaker, just a little bit. He doesn't, you know, not a lot of big plays. Doesn't give you that Beckham-esque where he can take it to the house at any time. He's a great, great, great receiver, but a healthy Julio Jones to me is the best receiver in the NFL. That's just me, though.
Yeah.
You have an opinion on that?
We'll table that debate for another time. I just want to give one last praise to the Eagles. They, after embarrassing themselves early on, they defended their championship very well. Nothing to be ashamed of. And also,
Agreed. Their
defense in this game, they made the Saints work for every yard. That Fletcher Cox had a monster game. He was just a beast in the middle.
He was in on
every play. And also, I got to give credit to that LeBlanc kid, he's kind of a nomad. He's kind of like on his third different team. They had to pick him up because of injuries.
He played great.
He had a pick, and he was deflecting passes. He was in there on every play. That, for a guy that was like a nomad, not a high drafted stud, it's like his third different team. He represented himself very well. So kudos to the Eagles. And you know, I don't mean the shit on Foles, but let's hold off. He was in a perfect situation. With a great team, with a great offensive line and a great defensive line, but he showed that if it's a close game, he could get you over the top. But he's not the guy that's going to carry a team. Some mediocre team. It's probably going to be a team that has blue uniform. Is going to sign up to $20 million, and he's not going to carry them over the top unless they improve other areas of the team. Now maybe if he goes to a team like Denver or Jacksonville. That's just one or two players away. He might have a better shot in doing some of his magic there.
Man, you think I don't know that he's? It's such a tough thing because he looks so pedestrian sometimes.
Yeah, you know, he makes some awful passes. He's good in the clutch.
But, I mean, even last year before the playoffs, I mean, he was awful at the end of the season. I mean, putrid,
bad
awful.
Pick, he's good for at least one bad pick a game, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you remember, 2 years ago, the last game of – it was week 16. It was Raiders-Eagles on a Sunday night. Or Monday night, I'm sorry. I mean, and it was just the worst game I've ever seen. I mean, it was like 7-3 or something, and I mean, neither guy could do anything. Anyway, rant over.
Unfortunately, I hate to say it, but your boys made him into a folk hero because lousy-ass Patricia couldn't come up with a friggin'
he played great
to stop
in that game. He really did. I mean, he played phenomenal in that game, and he played great. He played very well against the Bears, too. The Bears have a different kind of defense, but I mean, all through. I mean, he had like a Flacco-esque kind of run through the playoffs last year. You know what I mean? Just I mean, he was streaky.
I just think if your boy Patricia had a little bit of game plan, and also if you're a control freak of a coach, you know, then Malcolm Butler didn't salute him or whatever the fuck the reason why he didn't play. Maybe you know things could have been different.
They could have been.
That statue wouldn't have been up there of Foles.
All right. Bringing back bad memories. The dark cloud just came over the podcast here. All right, so let's take a look at the conference championship games.
Wait, hold up. Hold up, Roger. Before that, let's take a halftime break of from football. I have to ask you an important question.
Oh, of course.
To the one last time to honor non-football related, to honor the Sopranos 20th anniversary of the premiere of The Sopranos. I'm going to give you a multiple choice question. All right.
All right. I'm ready.
What was Paulie Walnut's most despicable act? I'm going to give you four choices. Number one, A is when he sniffed Adriana's panties when they were searching Moltisanti's house during his initiation. Okay, that's A. B, when they had to blow away the waiter that was having a seizure after. After he disputed Moltisanti stiffened him on the tip, and then they wound up hitting him in the head, and he was having a seizure, and Paulie had to put two in him. That's A. That's B. C, when he strangled, I mean, he suffocated that poor, the old bat, Minnie Matrone, when he was trying to steal the money under her bed. That's C. And D, when he botched the friggin', when he botched the Russian episode by antagonizing the Russian, and then he tried to throw Chris under the bus when he got Paulie on the phone. He blamed it all on Chris. So what was his most despicable act that it was for?
So for me, the Russian episode was the best episode in the history of the show, I think.
Oh, but, of course.
But the most despicable act was suffocating the old woman.
Minnie Matrone, that malignant cunt.
She was rough. She was rough, but I got a question for you.
Okay.
You remember your first blowjob?
What was his name? How long did it take him to come?
right? Did you hear what I said?
Yeah, how long did it take him to come? Yeah.
I know. I was doing the Paulie. Oh, Paulie Walnuts. Never be another character like him. Great stuff. That was a good little halftime show there, John. I wasn't expecting that.
Coming with some
creativity this week.
Yeah, I usually like to follow your lead, but sometimes you got to take charge.
I appreciate that. That was good. Was it just a one question? One question, or we?
Oh yeah, we're done, man. Yeah, you take the Matron. Wheel, just like in New Orleans, you take over the wheel.
Yep, exactly. For better or worse. All right, so Rams at Saints, rematch of a game the Saints won fairly comfortably during the regular season to give the Rams their first loss. Rams played a better game. Rams played a better game in the divisional round. Their performances against the Cowboys was, in my opinion, more impressive than what New Orleans did against Philly. I think the game comes down to a lot of, you know, again, not to be repetitive, but, you know, you have these two kind of high-flying offenses, but kind of the underbelly to both these offenses, the dirty little secret is that both of them are very much kind of run-first teams. And you saw that with the Rams the last week, and the Saints offense is very much predicated on getting Kamara and Ingram going. And so I think whoever can win that battle in the trenches is going to win this game. And if it's close, it's tough not to like Breeze coming up big in the big moment, or Goff making one or two mistakes. I just think New Orleans is a better version of this Rams team. I think the Rams are going to get there, but I think New Orleans is all wrong for them. I think it's the toughest out of the four teams left, three teams other than the Rams. I think the Rams would have an easier time in the Super Bowl with either the Chiefs or the Patriots than they will with the Saints. I think it's just a bad matchup for them. So I like the Saints here for the reasons I stated. I think it's a big game on the ground, because I think the Rams are going to, kind of similar to the Cowboys this week, I think they're going to want to stop the passing attack. I think Kamara and Ingram both have good games. And New Orleans defense showed me something, even though it was Foles. Goff can get rattled if things aren't going well. And I don't know if it's rattled, or he has bad games, because he seems to be cool and collected, but he seems like things can snowball for him, and he has bad games. And I can see the Saints jumping out on them a little bit early, maybe a pick from Goff mixed in there, and before you know it, they're up 14-17, and we saw how good they are at chewing the clock up when they have a lead. So Saints by double digits, that's what I think.
Yeah, as usual, boring as usual. Like, I'm banking on the Saints too. Pretty much, I think I had in the column a 31-19 or something like that. I'm banking on the Saints that they're not going to come out rusty. They're going to be ready from the start. They played a horrendous first quarter with the Eagles, and that's not going to happen again. They're going to be primed and ready for this one from the opening coin toss. And their defense is very underrated. The Saints kind of always had that reputation of a soft team, but they got a tough defense, very tough. Even though they lost Rankins, that was a big loss for them. But they have some good backups in there. They have some monsters on that line, like Cam Jordan. That really, I know the Rams' running game is a lot better than Philly, but Philly could do absolutely nothing on the ground, which was also a bit, they didn't really help Foles out there. Where they had to rely solely on the pass, and although the Rams' running game is a lot better, I still don't see them tearing them up like they did the Cowboys. So I'm going with the Saints too in double digits.
Man, we're both going double digits.
So to give also, you an idea, I like the experience of Peyton. Over, I think McVay is he's gonna get his eventually, but. This is Breeze just turned 40, and too much experience and the home field.
I think the Rams are 1 year away, and the home field is huge. The Saints are so tough to beat there. But so we're in agreement. So for the next game, John, I'm going to have you you lead us off. So Patriots-Chiefs in Kansas City in the freezing cold. Let's give us your analysis, because I'm certainly at least biased, and I'm having trouble seeing this one clearly. So,
all right, hold off, Seth. First of all, you should have quit while you're ahead and kept quiet, because I just did a Doppler weather search, and it's not going to be as traumatic as you think. There was talking about it's going to be 10 degrees or something. The latest report, we're as of Thursday night, is Kansas City. They're going to get some snow on Saturday. They're going to get that big storm on Saturday. And Sunday's looking at about game time's temperatures looking at about 30 degrees into the 20s. So that's I don't see the weather being too much of a factor there, if that holds up.
Certainly.
Because at the beginning of the week, they were talking about this is going to be an ice bowl. It was going to be like 10 degrees. But it looks like all the badness is going to be out Saturday. And by the time Sunday rolls around, it'll just be a cold day. So we could scratch the weather as a factor, although that could change too. But I like Bill Belichick in his career is with the Patriots. He's opposing teams have scored 40 points seven times, and three of them were Andy Reid. So I look for Andy Reid to have continued success with the offense. I think the Pats played their perfect game last week, and much like the Saints and the Rams, it looks like Houston's defense was kind of waiting for this moment. They were laying in the weeds all year, and they got tired of all the criticism, and they're saving their best for the playoffs. Justin Houston is gonna get that pressure that the Chargers didn't get, and he's gonna get a couple hits on Brady, and we're looking at about a 34-31. Chiefs are gonna pull it out.
All right, man. I love the Pats. This is a tall order. And I mean, over the years, it's, you know, I've learned time and time again that you can't underestimate Tom and Bill in the playoffs. But
oh, sure, I don't either. But I just think that Reed's finally going to come through, and he's finally got the Mahomes magic on his side.
Yep, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I think so. Looking at it objectively, the Patriots have been a bad road team this year. Unbeatable at home, bad on the road. So that's strike one. That hurts. Strike two,
also,
is Kansas City specifically has been a house of horrors for the Patriots historically. Go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
No. Also, what's the reason why they're playing this game in Kansas City and not New England? It's because of that stupid Miami game.
Another road game.
That's going to come. That's going to come back to haunt them. I just think that kind of bad karma is going to be. That's going to be the swaying factor, and it's going to come back to that stupid play at the end is the reason why they didn't have home advantage.
Yeah. So, on paper, it's tough not to like Kansas City because of those reasons. The thing is, you know, the thing you got to worry about if you're a Kansas City fan is Reed's a good coach, a great coach, but he has had some kind of game management issues, and Belichick's sort of the master on that with that stuff too. If the game's close, if the game's real close in the fourth quarter, some of the intangible stuff with Brady and Belichick versus Mahomes, who's an incredible talent, but is also a kid who, you know, like in that Rams game, he made a couple of mistakes. I mean, I love the guy. I absolutely love the guy. I think he's phenomenal, but tight in the play, tight game, fourth quarter of the playoffs. You almost feel like Brady and Belichick could pull the rabbit out of the hat, or you know, create that one mistake. That's kind of what we're hanging our hat on. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Chiefs kind of jump out and win a 34-24 kind of game. But I'm gonna be rooting hard for the Pats, of course. And I mean, if they play like they did last week, they can beat anybody. I think a lot of this game comes down to Kansas City's defense. They don't have to be great like they were last week, but if they're a complete sieve that just can't get a stop like they were a lot during the regular season, the Chiefs are in trouble. If they're just a little bit better than that, like you said, and they can put some pressure on Brady and they can get a couple of stops, excuse me, the Chiefs are probably going to win the game because the Patriots are going to have trouble stopping them, especially if your weather report holds up. If it's 5 degrees or something, I mean, that I know it. I think 99 times out of 100, it does favor the home team, and I think that this would be that one time that it would actually favor the Pats just due to experience in those kind of conditions. So I'm here hoping for, if they're Game of Thrones fans, I'm hoping the Ice King comes riding in on his freaking horse before the game. And but either way, great games. Both of them, I mean, this is what you want, right? You have these guys were the four best teams in the NFL for the season, and now they get to play each other for a shot at the big one. So regardless of result, the Super Bowl is going to be awesome because there's built-in storylines no matter what. You could have, you know, if it's Rams, Pats, if the two underdogs win, you've got the old genius versus the new genius, right? If it's Saints, Pats, you Breeze versus Brady for the first time. And then either one of them versus, you know, just Mahomes in the Super Bowl and Reed finally trying to get that done is would be massive, right? So great, great weekend of football coming up, and then the Super Bowl is going to be great as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go to Vegas corner, both 3 points or 3.5, so that means it's just even, and it's only going to the home team, and I don't see the Super Bowl being any different. The Super Bowl, whatever combination, it's probably not going to be more than a field goal either way.
Right.
And also, this what is this? The first time since the New England has been underdog since 2014 or something.
Yep. And I mean, they should be. I mean, if there was a line on this game before they played the games last week, which I'm sure you could find that somewhere, I bet it was 7. I mean, this is right. I mean, it's only 3 because of how good the Patriots looked against San Diego. Yeah. Right. On paper, because of the stuff we talked about, the Chiefs should be 6 or 7 point favorites, really.
Yeah, but based off last week, New England played a great game.
They did play.
That knocked a couple points. They close to a perfect game. So in the B&B era, they're I believe they're 3-4 on the road, and 3 of those losses were at Denver.
Correct.
And the other one was the Colts game where they were actually winning 21-0.
21-3. I remember that game.
Yeah.
That was the year that they beat the Chargers. And yep. That team, that was Brady. Even though they didn't make the Super Bowl, that was, like, I think their best performance, because the personnel that year was just awful. Like, you should go back and look at that roster. It was terrible. And the next year, because of that, they went out and got Moss and Welker and all those.
No, I remember that. But they had the Colts beat that.
It was
over. They had them down 21-0. Yeah. And Indy even had to make a defensive stand at the end, which was surprising. And also, it's interesting, the Denver games. Okay, so they lost to Peyton twice, and who was the third one? Was it Jake Plummer?
It was Jake Plummer. That wasn't in the title game, though, right?
It was in the division
first round.
The division, sure, but it was Jake Plummer who then the Steelers went to beat them in Denver. Wow.
Denver's a house of horrors for the Patriots too.
Yeah.
But Kansas City has thumped the Patriots in the regular season a few times.
No, of course. Wasn't this what year was that? The infamous we're on to Cincinnati game where they
that was the year they beat the that was the year the Patriots beat the Seahawks in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but that was but what caused the
it was the
yeah
the
drama
lost like
44-7
or whatever to Kansas City on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, the famous "We're on to Cincinnati" game where everybody buried that was the end of the Patriots dynasty.
Yeah, I was hosting, I was hosting the Sports Lounge at the time, and I had my friend, an analyst, Rocky, on, and Rocky single handedly turned around the Patriots dynasty by taking out the shovel, and the direct quote was, you know, the dynasty's over. You have to trade Brady right now while you can still get something for him. That was the direct quote. So, Rock, I know you don't listen, but if you ever do, thank you. All of Pat's Nation thanks you for your mush skills.
We're still waiting. It's going to go into the next decade. Unbelievable.
So we'll be in contact during the games, John.
Yeah, definitely. We'll do a little recap, and then we'll do a quick recap of the games, and then we'll follow the week after with the Super Bowl preview, sure.
Super Bowl preview, and next week just a quick recap, because I am going to be traveling to Phoenix for some WWE. I'm going to be going to NXT TakeOver on Saturday. I'm going to be going to the Royal Rumble Sunday, and I'm going to be going to Monday Night Raw on Monday night
with my
good buddy Ryder.
I heard you have an interview with Cliff Kingsbury to join his staff because I'm sure whoever he's going to hire probably knows less than you about football.
Well, I do have a better career winning percentage than him.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
500.
But you haven't put up 70 points a game in the Big 12 playing against the fucking college scrubs.
It's true. We'll see. Sometimes these things work out. So
yeah, I know.
They should just have Larry Fitzgerald coach the team. That's But so can't wait for the weekend, guys. As per usual, please contact us either in the chats or directly or however with any comments or stuff you want to talk about. If anyone wants to come on and talk with us, we are more than open to that. It's been a 2-man show all season. We almost had 3, but the guy heard our I sent him an episode, and he must have been like, man, I can't hang with these two studs knowledge-wise. So he backed out. So it's really, you know, if anyone wants to come on, we're happy to bring a third or a fourth or a fifth into the debate. Right, my friend?
Yeah, and good luck to we have our nation. We have a Saints representation in the nation. So hopefully it'll be us. And also we have a lovely Patriot fans, you and Brian and Maddie Sues and Senior, of course. We have a lovely Patriot fans, Jason Sherman and our Saints brothers,
Mr. Reish,
Mr. Reish, JJ, yeah, who gave us a shout out and Steve Bennett. So good luck. So hopefully it's a Pats and Saints, because I don't think we have any Rams or Chiefs fans in our hood. So
that's true.
So it's good to see it. It's a rare opportunity.
If I had to pick, I love the Saints fans. Guys, but if I had to pick what I would want the game to be, if you let me just pick, I would pick the Pats Rams.
Yeah, because you want Bill to take advantage of.
I want to win.
Of course, man. You want the best matchup, sure.
All right, so. For Mr. D'Amato, I'm the Cowboy. It's been another great week, and enjoy the games this weekend. We are out.
Salud.